Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Update your home with Palmero Vinyl Plank Flooring. It provides a genuine, weathered wood look that complements any decor and clicks together for easy installation. It's waterproof, scratch and dent resistant, making it perfect for active households. Save big money on our wide variety of flooring options at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Charles Leclerc wins the British Grand Prix.
Let's go!
Oh, finally.
How big a win was this for you?
A complete transformation of the narrative.
Tough time nevertheless. Only tough people left.
Leclerc was back to his best, and it was Lewis that was left scratching his head. It was a fantastic drive.
I think Lewis's reaction afterwards said a lot. He had Charles Leclerc on the end of the jab, and that's now vanished.
The fascinating thing to me was after the race, Kimi wasn't demoralised. It's not Ferrari v Mercedes, is it? It's Ferrari v Antonelli.
Yeah, George, I think straight line was okay in the race.
My interpretation of that comment was, mate, look in the mirror.
The spiciest slapback on a victory lap radio since Mark Webber said not bad for a number two driver.
Wasn't a victory lap.
Oh, come
the stuff
on!
Plays up.
No.
There's always drama at Silverstone. Hello, everyone, and welcome to F1 Nation's review of the British Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me in the paddock, in the Ferrari motorhome, I should add, are F1 TV commentary teammates, former F1 driver Julian Palmer and lead commentator Alex Jakes. Now, guys, what a race.
Really enjoyed it, I have to say. Yeah, it was a great race. There were just drama from the front to the podium fight, probably further back, but we didn't get to see so much of it because there was loads going on at the front. And then you got the Mercedes duo both having issues. Verstappen obviously having his own issue. Late safety car, shame. We didn't get one last lap of racing. But yeah, great race at Silverstone.
Jakesy, were you warming up for a last lap dash in the commentary booth?
Doing lunges, doing stretches. You rarely get a last lap shootout. I used to get excited when it was the last lap shootout in Formula 3 to win the British Grand Prix. And you just, if you get racing around here with one to go, you knew you were going to be into three wide action, cars going through. It would have been a melee like we had at the start of the sprint race. Oh, well.
Guys, look, we had hoped the safety car would come in on the penultimate lap, but it went round again as the FIA were actually just following the rule book to the letter. But even, you talk about three wide, Jakesy, even if we'd had that lap, do you think it would have changed the result, or do you think Charles Leclerc had it in the bag?
I think Charles Leclerc had it in the bag. He was nervous, but and for all of his like worry that he had to go through that final moment, I think he was going to win the Grand Prix regardless. I think the melee would have been caused by George Russell trying to hang on to second.
And do you think he would have done?
No. I think Russell's the man that was breathing the biggest sigh of relief, because he's obviously collected some good points. He was out there on pretty old medium tyres. Everyone behind him was on new softs. I was fascinated to hear Charles actually talk about tyres were feeling cold, one lap. Obviously, the leader's jitters when he had the race in the bag. But if you imagine if Charles worried on a new soft, on a used medium, that's really tricky for George. So I think he'd been gobbled up, actually, in a lap. Lewis definitely would have had a chance to come through. I even wonder if Lando's coming through for a podium just with one lap of racing. For George, it would have been so tricky. We've also seen a few times this year, safety car restarts, even when he's on the right tyres, have been tricky, if you think back to Japan and China. So he is a very lucky man today.
Well, look, Charles won brilliantly, and it had been 624 days since his last win at Austin in 2024. But perhaps the biggest headline surrounds Kimi Antonelli, who suffered his second reliability issue in the last three races when he was closing in on Leclerc. I mean, these reliability issues have cost him in particular a load of points. He's not sleeping easy tonight.
Two times in three races, he's been on for hugely demoralizing moments for George Russell with the result he was about to score. He'd passed him on track to beat him in Barcelona. He was going to extend the championship lead by, let's be honest, winning the British Grand Prix. And those results slipping through his fingers. He's now had two big ones slip away. George has had the disappointment of Canada.
So I think there's a 31-point swing in that moment. You got George running fourth, which you would say is probably where he's most likely to end up, whether he passes Max or gets done by Lewis. He was in the middle of that three-car sandwich with the pace to be in the middle of that three-car sandwich. So he's fourth. You've got Kimi certainly heading to victory with the pace advantage he had on Charles. I don't think there was a chance that Leclerc holds on to that. And in the moment, you've suddenly got Kimi getting no points and George getting up to second place. So it's 31 points. On the one hand, you say that, yeah, he's not sleeping well because all of those points have slipped through his fingers. There was another, 21-point swing that he had in Barcelona where he retired and George inherited three more points for second place. So it's hugely damaging. Obviously, George had his own moment in Canada. But the fascinating thing to me was after the race, Kimi wasn't demoralized. He wasn't, you know, at his wit's end. He was quite calm about it. He probably had a few laps to process it. But nonetheless, he has pace. We spoke about it already on this podcast a few times where George gets a good result, but he doesn't have the pace. And for me, that's the bigger question. I think George even mentioned it after the race where it was almost easier Sunday night in Canada for him because he felt like he deserved to win the race there. Whereas here you inherit second, but you're still worried about kind of your inherent skill or your ability to get performance out of this car that he needs to win a championship.
JP, put your helmet back on and put us in the driving seat of that Mercedes of Kimi Antonelli, right? That looked from the outsiders to be quite a small bit of aerodynamic damage on the front left. And yet it had massive ramifications. Can you just tell us how that might have felt behind the wheel?
Well, it seemed like it was just a physical, it was obviously a carbon fibre component on the inside of the wheel that must have got lodged to actually stop him being able to turn the wheel. So he was turn the wheel, but not affecting the steering arm. So he's not able to actually turn the car. We were on board with him at the time and he was kind of slow into Maggots and Becketts. And then he really couldn't turn the car when he had to do it at the final part. So you realise straight away there was a problem. Thought maybe it was a puncture because of what was happening to George. But in so many of these, any reliability part is so often a tiny part that has bigger consequences. And I think just the way that part failed was even more unlucky because obviously when they ripped it off, he managed to at least continue. And if they'd done that at the first time of asking in the pits, probably he could have held on to a sixth place or something and got a few more points. Mm.
Well, look, let's now celebrate the winner, right? Charles Leclerc, his first win, as I said earlier, for 624 days. Given all of his problems, particularly in recent races, how big a win was this for him?
A complete transformation of the narrative. He laid the foundation for it in qualifying by finding a balance good enough to beat Lewis Hamilton. That's not been easy of late. He was obviously ahead of him in Austria, but there was a mitigating factor with the deployment of the yellow and the crash for Verstappen. So to get to the front row on merit was huge. First time he's ever done that at the British Grand Prix around Silverstone, despite the pace he's had here in the past. And then to convert it on a day where it could have easily got away from him, very, very strong. And I think Lewis's reaction afterwards said a lot. He had Charles Leclerc on the end of the jab, and that's now vanished with this result today.
Even yesterday after qualifying, he was circumspect because I think he's been through the ringer quite a lot recently. You've had Lewis rise back to his greatest level, I would say. And meanwhile, Charles, who's had this team pretty much where he wants it for recent years, I mean, forever actually at Ferrari, even when Seb was here, Charles came in and had the pace on him. Suddenly he's having to have some sort of deep inner thoughts on how do I go, am I good enough? How do I get more out of myself? And it was week in, week out, even if it was small details, the consistency was with Hamilton. So he did a great job yesterday in qualifying. He's spoken quite a lot about making big changes with the car, having looked at something from Friday, a bit of data. And it seems to have translated because in the race, unlike in Austria, where he just out-qualified Lewis or other recent races where the consistency of Lewis's ability to put out a time is shown over multiple laps, here it was the role reversal. Leclerc was back to his best and it was Lewis that was left scratching his head. It was a fantastic drive.
Just to continue the boxing analogy, Jake, I thought there was an interesting moment in the press conference afterwards where Charles had just been discussing about finding something in the data on Friday night. And then Lewis then spoke and said, well, you know, he migrated towards my setup. I very much felt it was Lewis just saying, hang on, it's me. It's my ideas that's driving this team forward.
fascinating moment. Lewis was incredibly downbeat. He was next to the press conference room leads to the commentary box, and he was outside the commentary box just on his phone in his own thoughts afterwards.
I think watching it, guys, by the way, on F1 TV, looking at your analysis.
Yeah, that's why he was so downbeat, bless him. Yeah, I think just to suddenly be getting Ferrari around you, and when it's always been Charles' team, when he's suffered that 2025 moment where he was just worst season of his career, suddenly to turn the page and have Charles Leclerc struggling, that has vanished with this weekend.
It's interesting that he's vocalising that, though, to everyone with Charles next to him.
Yeah.
That's a flex, isn't it? Mm. It's a
jab. I think he's hit him.
Yeah, yeah,
although
exactly.
What was interesting, while he was saying this, Charles was talking to George, so I don't even know if Charles was listening.
He'll know when everyone writes it up.
Yeah.
Charles will listen into this podcast. So he'll know now.
Yes. Look, what about the pace of Ferrari? I know, JP, you were saying that this was Kimi Antonelli's race until he had his problems, but Ferrari have now won two of the last three races, right? We're going to Spa next. I mean, just in terms of pace between Mercedes and Ferrari, who has the faster car now?
Mercedes, but
emphatically,
with enough, I think. But what's brilliant is it's close. So Mercedes are having obviously these reliability blows. So you've got Antonelli in two of the last three races not finishing. Austria is the massive blip for Ferrari in between. I think they're so encouraged by their ability this weekend when they came in doom and gloom about what they were going to do off the back of last week. The power unit suddenly looks like it's working much more aligned to what they thought they were going to bring when they put it on the car in Austria. Degradation was not a factor here. When it's a factor again, we might see Mercedes just have that advantage once more. What I was really impressed with Ferrari was the translation of performance from the sprint to the Grand Prix. Even if you look at Hamilton v Antonelli, it felt like Kimi was having to work a lot harder to clear Lewis. In the sprint, it felt like he was catching past really easily. Whereas in the Grand Prix, the deployment looked better for the Ferrari in wheel-to-wheel battle, to the extent that Kimi was on the radio saying, please don't drop me back into traffic. That was hard work. So that's encouraging for them. But I still... when we say Ferrari v Mercedes, it's not Ferrari v Mercedes, is it? It's Ferrari v Antonelli. I think Antonelli has not only Ferrari, but I think he's got George under control. If you had two George Russells in the car, I think Ferrari would be cock-a-hoot. I think they'd be absolutely fine with life, but Kimi's making the difference.
This is a paid advertisement for BetterHelp. Most Brits believe seeking support is a good thing in principle, yet BetterHelp's latest research suggests many still feel there are barriers that stop people from actually taking that step. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Brits and revealed that 84% believe getting support is wise, yet 67% say society discourages people from doing so. That's quite a sobering statistic, isn't it? And it just goes to show that despite attitudes towards mental health having come a long way over the years, there's still a lot of work to do to remove the stigma around seeking support. I know that if a friend or loved one was struggling and needed extra help, I'd encourage them to take that step and point them in the right direction. And BetterHelp is one of the leading online therapy platforms, having served more than 6 million people globally. And what I like is that they guide you through the first step with a short questionnaire to help match you with a fully qualified therapist based on your needs and preferences. And if for any reason you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/F1Nation. That's betterhelp.com/F1Nation. Back to George then. Did we see any improvement from George this weekend compared to Austria? Let's not forget, he won the last race.
Yeah, he was worse this weekend. He was pole and he won in Austria. So,
and interestingly, after the race in Austria, he was saying, yeah, this isn't even my kind of track. The Red Bull Ring is not my kind of track. Just you wait till we get to Silverstone. Yeah. And you're saying he was worse.
Well, he was, wasn't he? It's not too hard to work that out. Pole to the win versus P4 on the grid to a lucky second place. It's not to say that he was great in Austria either. So his comments were valid, but he just didn't translate to the performance here.
Look, while we're talking about jabs, I thought it was...
Don't bring that. I'm jabbing George.
No. Yeah. I was wondering where the Toto Wolff was, right? Because George has been quite outspoken this weekend about the lack of straight line speed. And he even talked about it on the radio. And Toto came straight back at him and said, no, the straight line speed's fine. My interpretation of that comment was, mate, look in the mirror.
The spiciest slapback on a victory lap radio since Mark Webber said not bad for a number two driver.
Wasn't a victory lap.
For Charles Leclerc.
The spiciest one for a second place.
Yeah. For the... Oh, come
on. The stat plays up.
No, like, sorry, like, it's the end of the race. He's not... I know he's not won, but like, that was... I thought that was Toto Wolff saying, you find the answer.
But you know what George is? He should have a future. I'm sure he will not want it, but if he wants to go to politics, he'd be brilliant. Because not only does he know the rule book very well, which we saw in Austria, we saw him immediately explain why it was fine. I backed off, single yellows, all that. He knows the rule book, he plays the games. But we also hear him get what he wants to say across all the time. And he's thinking about it. He knows he's not performing at a level good enough to win the championship. He knows that. As a driver, you're realising if you're having to fight 11 tenths of your potential to get close to your teammate. But he's trying to get, once again, his message across. So if you're saying you're down on the straights, that means it's not the driver. That means it's something wrong with the car. Toto Wolff swatted it away, didn't he? It was, no, you need to find more. Stop blaming us, the team. But even if you look at Austria, he did have a solid enough race. He won the Grand Prix. I didn't think it was swashbuckling. I thought the two behind were a little bit quicker. But he came across the line and told us on the radio once he did it without a drink. Went to the cool-down room and immediately, I found it almost
wasn't
comical.
Wasn't the cool-down room, it was actually a spare cupboard. Sorry, no need.
You two have spent a lot of time together this week.
It's been a long week.
Went to the spare cupboard. But it was almost the way that he was like, Max, sorry, just checking, did you have a drink for the race?
Yeah.
Kimmy, did you have a drink? I didn't have a drink, guys. Yeah. And it was very much like, yeah, he's making his point of there was a little bit more in there. He was slightly uncomfortable. And he's very good at just getting across what he wants to get across. And he was trying to do the same on the in lap. But obviously, Toto Wolff wasn't interested in that becoming a line for him to use. And yeah, it was a bit spicy.
And George said that I'm not performing at the level to win the world championship.
It's important just to keep on fighting, but... The truth is, there's been a lot of things this weekend we don't really understand. We have straight line speed issues yesterday and on Friday. I think it was better today, but the performance wasn't good enough. And if I'm being brutally honest, I'm not going to fight for a championship if the performances continue like that. So I'm not coming away from this weekend satisfied. I'll take the result. I was probably more satisfied leaving Canada when I broke down from the lead than I am today standing P2, just because I probably deserve the win in Canada, and today I didn't deserve to stand where I stood.
He was then asked, well, you know, do you think the points gap between you and Kimi is an accurate reflection of your season? Because, you know, do you feel the bad luck that you've had is now, you know, Kimi's had his bad luck, so we're even Stevens. And he said that the points gap up to now, he should be behind. He said anything between 10 and 30 points is what he thought was an accurate reflection of their two seasons. I don't know whether you two agree on that.
Across the board, regardless of how it's shaken out, if he can't find an answer of how to access his talent in this regulation set, it doesn't really matter, which is why his mood is in one place and Antonelli's is another, despite where they finished. Like, Antonelli, at the current level of performance compared to George Russell, would need an extraordinary run of bad fortune. He's clear against all expectations, but he is, and Russell knows this.
When was the last time George was quicker than Kimi in a race?
I mean, Melbourne, right?
Melbourne?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge problem. It's difficult. 25 points is so generous that George is this close to Kimi, to be honest, given their relative performance.
Do you know what I think would be a fascinating conversation? Would be to sit George and Charles down together, maybe right here in the Ferrari motorhome, and say, guys, you two have struggled with the 26 spec cars. Are the problems the same?
It's fascinating that they're the ones that have been capable of great Q3 laps at the end, find it when it matters.
In ground effect cars, Jakesy.
And then you had someone like Lewis Hamilton, who just hated the ground effect cars from day one. And he's probably going, I've sat through the regs that didn't suit my driving style. And now you have to sit through the regs that don't suit your driving style. They've got to find an answer to the problem. The one thing that maybe George can take is Lando Norris last year, after they had the suspension update to the front of that McLaren. Lando, a few races later, mind you, was able to find his best again. So it's not over. But if he doesn't answer that question, that it's going to be Antonelli.
And I still think that's the one thing that will be sitting uneasily with Kimi, is his level of performance is so good, but he only has 25 points on the board. George is a driver that's fully capable of finding his feet again and dishing out three wins on the bounce and having that swagger back. So for all that, the reality right now isn't great for him, even if he's scrabbling around for results, it might be like Lando. It might be that he comes on good. There's so much of the season to go. And Oscar might have felt a similar thing when he lost the Grand Prix win here at Silverstone last year. No worries, I'm still feeling great. It went away from him, and Kimi still has plenty to prove over the season.
Do you think George can get there with the car as it is now, or will it require an upgrade from Mercedes to take it more in the direction that he wants?
He doesn't seem to have a huge explanation for what's going on. I was speaking to the guys at Mercedes, and they were saying, well, it just feels like Kimi's able to drive it more on the limit of grip than George. So he gets to what he feels is the car sliding around. And unless it's a Q3 lap or everything, something's just talking to him that extra bit and he's going to take some risk, he's not able to take it to that level, basically 100% of the car. And so they were almost saying that he's kind of underdriving it slightly, whereas you get Kimi there that's so in tune with what the car's doing. He's got some feeling inside him it's basically your innate skill to feel the car, and he's able to do that more consistently. If you look through the data, a lot of the time you see, and through this weekend as well, first lap on a new tyre, Kimi's able to execute the lap. Second lap on the tyre, George gets much closer. So maybe Kimi is just taking, this is in qualifying mode, maybe Kimi is taking that little bit more in the first lap, more risk when there's a bit more grip around, taking more out of the tyre. So it's a feeling that George is getting, and I don't know how easy that is to fix.
Jake, so you made the point on the preview on Thursday that if you look at the season as a whole, you know, George invariably gets there for that last lap of Q3, but Antonelli gets there on lap one. And this might be an unpopular thing to say, but are we just seeing Antonelli, is he just a faster racing driver? Is that an unpopular opinion?
Well, he did have flashes last year, didn't he? Even in the ground effect era, of being able to turn up to a racetrack that he'd never seen before, Miami Sprint, put it on sprint pole after 1 hour of practice. So he's had that. And then obviously with the experience of going round again, he's had that way more consistently. I think the strange thing for Russell is that, and Jolene can speak to this in detail, it feels like Charles Leclerc and George Russell started digging in to the data in the gap as to why it wasn't particularly working. Russell especially has said that he dug into why he was lacking and has almost opened a Pandora's box of what's possible and doesn't have an answer. So could be quicker, but if you get lost with the setup and you have to start altering your driving, does that not become the conditions that we're seeing? Kimi's very comfortable. He's basically 100. George is almost having to process the thought of what to do.
Yeah, he's in a difficult spot. The only thing I would say is the sample size isn't huge to say Kimi is just the better driver. He's young. He's obviously a prodigy. Mercedes have seen him from such a young age. And when you have these talents coming through so quick, obviously you're thinking Max, you're thinking various other drivers that parachuted in a generational. It feels that at the moment, but is it a quirk of the car? They need to be driven slightly differently than the previous regs, as we've already mentioned. Is it that you see other, even Max doesn't seem as comfortable with this car. Charles certainly isn't. Lewis has come back. It's different driving styles maybe working. And so maybe it is a bit of troubleshooting for George. And maybe as the cars evolve in this era or change again, maybe we'll see that iron out. I feel like the sample size is quite small, that we're seeing Kimi in an absolute sweet spot. And until things evolve, then we'll see if he's a champion and a generational talent and all the rest.
Hamilton was definitely down after the race. When you think about the high of sprint qualifying on Friday afternoon, he was buzzing, wasn't he? And that that was as good as it got all weekend, and it seemed to just slip away from him thereafter, really.
He wasn't happy with his setup, the direction he went from the sprint to the Grand Prix. He said he was struggling a lot with understeer in the race. It actually looked like he was limited by oversteer, looking through through qualifying in the end. Inevitably, when your teammate wins and it's on your home soil where you're an absolute legend, then it's going to hurt a bit more. But I think he can still be encouraged by the overall pace of Ferrari. He's narrowed the gap to Kimi, playing the long game. Things are still in play. Comme ci, comme ça.
He was very interesting about the false start, in that he totally held his hand up and said, yes, it happened. But he said, I didn't ask my hand to do that.
Bizarre. I've never done that.
Or he very rarely jumps the start.
I can't remember him doing it before, to be honest. He's done so many races. He's had so many great successes at Silverstone. Was something wishing him to just launch into the lead at his home race. He actually got a great start, which is surprising given he jumped before, which normally catches you out. Then you hit the brakes and you're all out of kilter. I can't imagine that, you know, the occasion got to Lewis. That's how it sounds. But he's done so many great races here. It just sounds strange.
This episode is sponsored by Shopify. You'd be amazed how many people have told me over the years about a business idea they've always wanted to start. Maybe it's something they've designed themselves. Maybe it's a hobby they'd love to turn into something more. But somehow life just gets in the way and it never quite gets off the ground. That's exactly what I like about Shopify. It removes so many of those barriers by giving you everything you need to build your store and start selling from day one. Listeners of the show can start a free trial today at shopify.com/nation. And it's not just easier for you either. Shopify's checkout is designed to remove friction at the point where it matters most, when someone's ready to make a purchase. It helps more customers complete that first purchase. And when they come back, their details are already saved. So checking out again just takes one tap. And because Shopify takes care of so much of the setup and checkout, you've got more time to focus on growing your business. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business. So go make it one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/nation. That's shopify.com/nation. This episode is sponsored by Anthropic. One thing I've learned from spending so many years in the world of Formula One is that the best people never stop asking questions. Engineers, team principals, drivers, they're constantly looking for better ways to understand a problem and find an edge. That's why I find Claude so interesting. It's designed for people who don't settle for the first answer, but want to think more deeply about the challenges they're trying to solve. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Whatever your job happens to be, one feature I can certainly see the value in is Claude's deep research. Rather than just pointing you towards a handful of search results, it's designed to pull together information from multiple sources, complete with citations, which could save a huge amount of time if your work involves tackling complex subjects. And you can go one step further by connecting it with the professional tools you already use, like Notion and Google Workspace. So instead of jumping between different apps and documents, you've got everything working together in one place, making it much easier to keep everything organized. For problems worth solving, get started with Claude at claude.ai/nation. Now, what of Red Bull and Max Verstappen? I think they rolled out of one of their home races in Austria last week, all cock-a-hoop, thinking, brilliant, the upgrade's working, just you wait till we get to Silverstone, another home race, and it's like they never turned up. Max was even saying after qualifying, I can't wait to go home.
Yeah, that's as bad as it gets. That was after qualifying. Well, then it got worse. Yeah, it's not as bad as it gets. That was Sunday night. So, yeah... Power unit issues for Max, wasn't happy with the balance, then has this recurring issue of his active aero not closing properly on the rear wing, which is what sent him off, it transpires, in Austria qualifying. And it's, again, it's not reattaching properly when he finds the corner, which is a high speed at Stowe. It's pretty bad. You know, he worked so hard. He actually did a great race to be in position to get a podium at the end of that. And you can't, you just, there's no chance to save a car when you haven't got the downforce on the rear. So bad. He was actually not wanting to start the race from the grid. He wanted to go to take a new power unit. He was that unhappy with his straight line performance. So,
and unhappy with the decisions being made by Red Bull.
Yeah. I actually think when you look at it, the fact that he was due to finish third before his next failure, it kind of actually justifies Red Bull's decision to keep him on the grid, because the thought of him doing better than that from the pit lane is difficult. Obviously, then he'd have a new power unit in the pool, so maybe that's a benefit later down the line. But the fact that he's even vocalising all of this and he's not happy, we know Max's contract situation, and is he looking around elsewhere? He's clearly disgruntled again with things. And when you're sent backwards off at high speed consecutive weekends, you're going to be questioning things.
Well, and it's not often that someone like Isaac Hadjar out-qualifies Max Verstappen around a driver's track like Silverstone.
Don't say his name with so much disdain.
I didn't mean to. I was just a young guy versus a four-time world champion.
No, you are right, yeah. And to be fair to Isaac, he's been doing a really good job. He wasn't far away in sprint qualifying. And it hurts any driver when you're beaten by your teammate. You know, mentioned George and wanting to tell people that his straight line speed was down. Max was saying that already through qualifying, that his speed wasn't there. You get back into the garage in qualifying, you look at your data trace. If you see your straight line speed isn't there, you're trying to fight with one hand tied behind your back. You just can't compete, because again, straight line speed, unless you're doing something weird in the corners with energy management and all of that jazz, if it's just pure grunt, you can't do anything more than just upshift and wait for the next braking zone. If you're losing time there, it's an impossible fight.
Laurent Mekies, team principal, came on a sister podcast to this, Beyond the Grid, earlier in the year, in which she said, we are paying the price for prioritising a title challenge with Max last year. We developed that car way later than we otherwise would have done, and hence we're on the back foot at the start of this year. Now, you assume that Max would have bought into that philosophy, that chronology, if you like, prioritised end of 25, difficult start to 26. Yet, he seems to have a very short memory, because he seems to be incredibly frustrated for what seems to have been a roadmap that he would have known about.
It is July, though. Like, I think he would have...
What, race 9? He was expecting more from the upgrade last week.
Well, I think after that was brought in and he was straight back into the fight, to then... I think it's more the fact that he highlighted that he's been pitched off the road at high speed twice in 8 days. I think that is probably, in the modern age, not a nice place to be for a driver. And that's fundamental. That's not something that can be improved overall. I think, you know, he's committing to fast corners, and safety standards are high, right? But it's still not something that he wants to be experiencing.
And then you're doubting the next time you turn. What's the next track? Oh, great, Spa. Is the rear wing attaching? Here we go. Let's see what's happening at Pouhon. No thanks. Can we go back to the old one that's much slower? But at least I know I'm not going to hurtle into the barriers. You know, it's a big concern for a driver. You need to have the fundamentals right. And if you're now doubting that the new part you've got on has just inherent flaws that mean occasionally, once in a while, it won't shut, it doesn't matter if it's once every 50 laps. That one time you will be off into the barriers, or you'll be skittling off into the gravel if there's enough runoff. So I can see that is such a big issue for any driver, and it happens to be Max on both occasions here. We shouldn't forget, he nearly won the race in Austria, though. So the upgrades, they didn't work out that well. There is some deployment. It's a different circuit. Spa maybe is not going to be great for them, because, again, the deployment's going to be important and there's really long straights. But other circuits, the upgrades, they obviously are slowly but surely coming good. So I don't think we should necessarily beat up on them too hard.
Probably more galling having been back into the fight for the first time all season, and then suddenly back to trying to scrap for a podium, hoping things go wrong for other people, having been 2 seconds away from the Grand Prix win in Austria.
And I suppose what's a little bit scary for them is that, you know, the fast corners of Silverstone, as you say, JP, we're going to Spa next. So if it doesn't work here, what are the chances of it working properly at Spa, where, of course, it's a kind of home Grand Prix for him? It's the Orange Army, isn't it?
And how do you test it? without putting it on the car. It's so difficult to put the load on the car when it's stationary to work out the forces required for that rear wing, which is now the whatever you want to call it, flippy wing, Macarena wing, rotisserie wing. It's got to go through a lot of work to shut properly again. It was always going to be the issue. When I saw it first on the car of Ferrari, you think, okay, great. It looks like it's going to be minimizing your drag, but how quickly and effectively can it shut? I don't know how easily they're going to replicate that before they put it back on the track.
And it kind of reminds me of McLaren and Ferrari in 2009. Both of those teams developed late into 2008. There was a big regulation change the winter of 08 into 09. And of course, they struggled the following year. It feels like we've been there before and Red Bull are experiencing that now. Well, guys, it's been an amazing weekend. 564,000 fans have crammed themselves into Silverstone. It's been a festival, not only a motor race. Huge success. It's been a privilege to be here. Driver of the day. Come on, we're going to end it the usual way. JP, who's the guy?
Yeah, I'm glad considering that we had a really decent race, even if we didn't get the final lap. For me, the driver of the day, it has to go to Charles Leclerc. I just think from
buying
where he's
buying time
been,
like a pro, everyone. Yeah. Hey, those radio days coming
I'm
into...
I'm just bringing some drama, that's all. Not padding for time at all. If you listen, I just want to say really loud and clear that it has to be, once again, Charles Leclerc.
Yeah.
I think just from where he's been, to turn it around into Saturday, deliver it on Sunday. Obviously, Kimi could have had the win, but the fact that Charles was even making it a race in the Ferrari today, I thought was admirable.
If Kimi hadn't had his issues and had won the race, who would have been your driver of the day?
Charles Leclerc. But it would have been close. So you got to say Kimi's there as well. But for me, I think very strong from Charles. And I'm just used to Kimi being amazing. So when Charles's been in a difficult time and then he's amazing, then I'll give it to Charles just for once.
Charles Leclerc as well. It could have turned into.
But don't use all that time and then copy mine.
Well, you just made very very good argument. No, I just you look at the whole result and it's got to be Charles Leclerc because that could have turned into an entire summer worth. And if Lewis Hamilton gets momentum, he's not going to lose it. We were talking about it earlier. He's had pressure before. He's had a champion teammate alongside him before. He's never had Lewis Hamilton before get on a roll. So he had to find an answer, and he did. Also, shout out to Isaac Hadjar, who's seemingly getting closer and closer to ending that second seat Red Bull curse. He's done very, very well this year.
Go on, TC. You got to throw in a Franco Colapinto curveball here. Points for Alpine.
I mean, come on, it's it Gabby Bortoletto. Let's not mess around.
It was a great P9 for Colapinto.
And points for Audi.
Yeah.
You got to say well done to them again.
Well done to Gabby for getting, P8? First points since Melbourne for them.
Yeah, that was a genuinely great result.
But if you're asking me for my driver of the day, I'm afraid all three of us are going to say the same thing because it was a great result. He did everything required. Perfect start. Disappears off and... It's not his fault that Kimi Antonelli had issues, is it? He did everything required and was faster than his teammate.
And maybe, against the odds, even if Kimi didn't have the issue, he's going to produce some swashbuckling elbows-out defence that we were deprived of.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I think a mention in dispatches...
But maybe. You can't criticise something that didn't happen.
JP, I'm also going to give a shout out to Lawson. I love the work that Lawson's doing this year. Liam Lawson coming home today in P6. I mean, that Racing Pulls is a really good car. If you're at Alpine now, yes, they finished 9th and 10th. Clearly, the faster car now is the Racing Bulls.
No one wants to finish 5th, do they? Earlier on, we were eulogising Haas. Then it went to Alpine as surefire 5th place. Now it's Racing Bulls. It's... an intense old battle.
Well, it's 1 point between Alpine and Racing Bulls now. So what a stunning weekend, guys. Thank you both very much. Safe travels back. And let's do this all again at Spa.
Brilliant work. Cheers, TC. See you
Cheers,
then.
Cheers, TC.
For more reaction and analysis from Silverstone, please go to F1.com, the F1 app, or at F1 on social media. And do check out F1's other official podcasts. My guest on the latest episode of F1 Beyond the Grid is Lando Norris. That's out now on the Beyond the Grid feed, and you can watch our chat on the F1 YouTube channel. And on the latest episode of F1 Explains, Haas team principal Ayo Komatsu answers your questions about Formula 1. That's just below this episode on the F1 Nation feed. Thank you very much for listening. We will, of course, be back on Monday with our preview of the Belgian Grand Prix. But for now, F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. This episode is sponsored by Honda. Since its first Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix, Honda has always taken what's learned on the track and used it to build better cars for everyone. From pushing limits in F1 to engineering the next generation of hybrids like the Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid, Honda proves that racing doesn't just inspire innovation, it drives it. And that idea of taking lessons from the racetrack and applying them to road cars has always been a part of Honda's DNA. Decades of engineering in the demanding world of Formula One have helped shape the performance and efficiency you see in Honda's road cars today. And now that same thinking is shaping the next generation of hybrids as well. Cars like the 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Hybrid show that electrification can be both efficient and genuinely fun to drive. The 2026 Prelude Hybrid and Civic Sedan Hybrid are engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Prelude and Civic and the latest innovations at honda.com.